This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about road safety. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. I have reporter Liz Tung with me in the studio right now. And Liz, you were riding your bike a couple of months ago in Philadelphia, and then you hit a pothole. What happened next?
So it was basically like I hit a brick wall. Like, I've never had an accident like this before. I basically flew over my handlebars. I was like airborne. And then I landed on my right knee and my arm.
Did you not see the pothole, or were you unable to avoid it?
No, I totally missed it. I didn't see it at all. I had no idea what had happened until I was able to go back and inspect it.
And how hurt were you?
So in the moment, it was kind of hard to tell. Some good Samaritans came out to help me, and I was super embarrassed. I was just like, I'm fine, I'm fine. And I grabbed my bike and I hobble over to a stoop in the shade because it was also super hot. And once I got there, I was in so much pain that I thought I had like cracked my kneecap. Ugh. And so I'm sitting there and I'm doing slow breathing so that I don't like pass out. And then finally I was, you know, okay enough to get up and ride my bike away. But incredibly, no, I didn't have any serious injuries. I just had like a big bruise and some road rash on my arm.
Yeah. And you're really lucky you still have all your teeth.
Yes.
Because like, with that kind of injury, that's like, ah.
I know.
So since that day, you've been on a bit of a quest to find that pothole that brought you down and also to understand more about how potholes come into existence, like what causes them. What have you learned?
My quest started on a hot afternoon in South Philly.
Okay, everybody, keep your eyes peeled for potholes.
I wanted to see the original pothole that caused my crash. In tow were my husband and his mom, who was visiting from England, and frankly seemed scandalized by the state of our streets.
There is quite a big patch in the road here where it would be easy to come off your bike.
As it turns out, there are potholes everywhere.
Is that a pothole? That was definitely a pothole. That was probably a pothole.
That's my husband, Wooly.
If you're going to be counting every little thing, you're going to run out of fingers very quickly.
Along the way, we documented the taxonomy of potholes, from little dips in the road to huge patched areas.
We're just passing by a huge hole in the concrete that has now been filled with rocks and trash and a cone.
I realized that the pothole I was looking for had plenty of neighbors.
I wonder if that's it. I mean, it's really like every 15 feet, there's like a big patch.
If I wasn't going to find my pothole, I at least wanted some answers. So I got in touch with Steve Lorenz, the chief highway engineer for Philadelphia's streets department.
How big a part of your job is dealing with potholes?
Every day. Every day.
As much as I'd like to blame the city for all the potholes, the fact is, Steve says, they're doing the best they can. The streets department fills literally thousands of potholes every year.
We try to be proactive, you know, but it's very challenging.
He says part of the challenge is the climate.
We have this constant freeze-thaw.
Here's what happens. When it rains, water trickles down through cracks in the roadway. It then seeps into the layers below, and of course, when water freezes, it expands, breaking up the brittle asphalt. For a more detailed explanation of what's going on, I hit up Rick Nelson. He's a longtime engineer who now heads up the Snow and Ice Cooperative Program for the American Association of State and Highway Transportation Officials, or ASHTO. Rick started off by breaking down the anatomy of our roadways.
There's the top layer, which is asphalt or concrete. That's the piece that you drive on.
Asphalt and concrete are both made from a mix of sand and crushed rocks. Where they differ is the binding agent. Concrete is made with cement, while asphalt is held together with a petroleum-based binder. These days, asphalt is often used to top roads because it's way cheaper, faster to lay down, and easier to repair. It's also more flexible. So even though it deteriorates faster than concrete, asphalt can handle that freeze-thaw cycle a little bit better because it's got some flex. Concrete, on the other hand, is sturdier and lasts longer, but more brittle. So anyway, that's the top layer.
Underneath that is what we call the base, and that's the foundation.
sort of like the foundation of a house. That's made from a mix of crushed rock.
And then underneath that is like the native soil, the virgin material that's there under the pavement.
Rick says there are two main things that cause these layers to break down.
It's water and it's loading. It's the cars and the trucks that pass over the top of the pavement.
When cracks appear in the pavement, and they always do, water gets down into the foundation and freezes. That causes the cracks to expand.
And so, you know, it pushes up on that pavement and it makes that crack a little bigger. And when it melts, it sort of flows away the fine materials and creates a void, a gap underneath that pavement. And then when the traffic goes over it again, it pushes that pavement down. And next thing you know, you have a pothole.
There was just one thing I didn't get. I thought concrete and asphalt were, you know, solid. Even if you have cracks in the top layer, how much room could there be down there for water to collect? As it turns out, there's one more factor, which I heard about from Luna Liu, a professor at Purdue University's Lyell School of Civil Engineering. And that factor is air pockets.
When it's freezing, the water expands, right? That will create an internal force to push the material apart. And then with melting, will create a void that will trap the air.
But these pockets aren't just created by water freezing. They're part of the concrete itself.
The concrete actually has, you know, cement, water, your aggregates, right? And then you definitely need air voids there. Why? Because you need a concrete to expand and contract.
Because of changing temperatures, which means that you need a bit of space in there for the concrete to move. Otherwise, you'll get internal stress that'll end up cracking the material.
Typically, outside, you want to have more air voids rather than inside, you have less air voids. Again, because air voids will reduce the strength of the material, right? So you don't want to have too much, but you don't want to have zero.
So, quick recap. Rain seeps into the cracks in the pavement. It flows down into the base and sub-base of the roadway. When it gets cold, the water freezes, expanding and causing the cracks to get bigger. When it gets warm, the water melts, and the debris flows away, leaving pockets in the pavement. Pre-existing pockets cause even more vulnerability. Then you've got 10,000-pound trucks driving over those weak points, and boom, pothole. Luna says potholes aren't just a pain, they're an expensive, dangerous pain.
The data has been showing the cost of the repairing potholes in the United States anywhere ranging from $2.5 billion to $3 billion. What that translates is about $600 per driver per year just to fix the repair of related to the damage caused by the potholes.
Plus, the cost drivers have to pay for damage to their cars or, worst case scenario, hospital bills, and how much cities have to pay out for lawsuits. Right now, for example, Detroit is facing a $10 million lawsuit from a guy who hit a pothole, resulting in a traumatic brain injury. Meanwhile, in New York City, an audit a few years ago found that over 6 years, the city paid $138 million to settle their pothole-related lawsuits. So obviously, it's in everyone's best interest to repair, or better yet, prevent potholes from forming in the first place. According to Rick Nelson, the key to dealing with potholes is acting early and often.
When it comes to preventing potholes, the best thing you can do is to make sure that those cracks are sealed up. Every place there's a crack and a seam, there's a potential for water to get down in there and work that against that foundation and cause that pothole to form.
Once you get past the crack stage, you've got to invest in actually patching the pothole using asphalt. But Rick says you can't wait too long.
And if you defer that maintenance, you know, at some point, you can't just patch that pothole anymore. You have to completely redo the pavement.
Which is way more expensive and way more time-consuming. But local transportation departments don't always have the resources to seal up cracks as soon as they appear. They've got a fixed budget and lots of priorities. Facility improvements, installing new roads, sidewalks, and bike paths, public transit, accessibility ramps, and on and on. So it's tough, Rick says. But some engineers are working on bigger solutions. Luna Lu, for example, is working on smart sensors that flag up stretches of road that need to be repaired before they start breaking down. Another idea she's working on, self-healing concrete.
Concrete can actually self-heal itself through some nanoparticles reaction with the water over the time. So therefore, again, the same idea to reduce the likelihood to form the potholes over the time and also reduce the frequent repair.
Researchers across the country have their own pet projects. Concrete made with plastic or rubber for better resilience, adding bacteria to concrete that helps it resist breakdown associated with winter salting. Even drones capable of fixing potholes as they pop up. And we're going to need those solutions, because even as pothole fighting technology has improved, my panel of experts told me our roadways have been getting worse. That's because we built most of our roads in the 1950s and 60s. They're already way past the age when they were designed to be redone, and they're handling more and heavier traffic than they were ever designed to carry. That, plus population growth and climate change, means our roads are facing more pressure than they were ever supposed to handle. None of which gives me any empathy for the pothole that wrecked me. Finally, after about 15 minutes of wandering around, I found the culprit. Probably.
Okay, here, this is the one that I suspect it really might have been. And it's so small, which makes me angry because I feel like, you know, it felt like a huge friggin' hole.
I was hoping I could take a picture and get the city to fill in the hole, maybe right on the spot with me watching. But given how small the thing is, the street crews probably have much bigger and more pressing holes to worry about.
That was Liz Tung reporting.